It's time for hour number two of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Why do we never get an answer?
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. And you know, we seldom are talking much about politics, even though KSEO is an extremely politically oriented station. You might wonder why that is sometimes. And, you know, to tell you the truth, it's mostly because the bashing Republicans and Democrats just doesn't do it for us. Like, there's so much more interesting ways to think about reality and politics, even. For this hour, we are going to look at politics, but from more of a Dr. Future point of view. Now, naturally, it wasn't me that came up with a hugely different point of view on politics. Actually, I heard about it from my mother. We came up to Montreal to visit my mother, and we are currently in the West Island area of Montreal, a very interesting English enclave of Quebec. Quebec is a largely French province, but my part of the family is English, and it's one of the things I've often wondered about, you know, the English-French, American-Canadian relationships. And my mother's been exploring this whole topic, recently reading a book called American Nations, A History of the 11 Rival Regional Cultures of North America. Very interesting book.
Colin Woodard.
Colin Woodard wrote that book in 2011. Fascinating. You might think that the great fissures in American society are something new, but hardly. From reading this book, it's one nation indivisible, America. Is that true? Apparently, from the very start, America has been a collection of fragmented societies, always at tension and rarely cohesive. And Woodard tries to explain the origins of what divides us. It's a very, very interesting book. And anyway, to discuss this a little bit, I brought my mother on the air with us here. Mom, welcome. This is Irene Lambert, Montreal.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can you tell me what fascinated you with Colin Woodard's work?
Well, I've always been interested in history and political science and sociology and culture and the philosophies of the various cultures that started, you know, left their own original homes to come to form a new country. And living in North America, you always have to wonder, why did people leave and be willing to settle, and especially in Canada where it's so cold, so many hardships, and yet they persevered. So what were all these different kinds of people? Who were they, and what effect have they had on North America?
Now, Woodard outlines 11 different groups here.
Yeah. Do you want me to give you a little summary?
Yeah, give us a little rundown.
Okay. So this is a really fascinating breakdown that I think has a lot of insight. Okay, so here we have the first breakdown is called First Nation. And that is the indigenous people, which are now today reclaiming their sovereignty and influence. So if you think of that as one nation, one region, that's one group of people. Two is what Colin Woodard calls New France, which is pretty much Quebec, and considers these folks to be liberal, earthy, egalitarian, and they are a nation in waiting.
That was also part of the Louisiana territory as well.
Right, the French speakers of this country.
Yeah.
Okay, third is Yankeedom, which were once religious but are now secular and have roots in Puritan moralism and believe in the pursuit of the greater good. They may be communitarian, but they're also authoritarian, maybe feudal, somewhat in decline. But by migration, they extend its cultural influence over the northern Midwest and the left coast.
No, wait a minute. Is this the Pilgrims, the stories we hear about?
I think of it as Mitt Romney, right? It's kind of like the Massachusetts, Boston Tea Party Yankees.
Now, didn't we come from that line, Mom?
My mother's family are known here in Canada as United Empire Loyalists.
United Empire Loyalists, don't
we? Who left Massachusetts around the time of the Revolution because they didn't feel that they wanted to break away from England.
Oh, so you were the enemy of the Yankees. You were the Loyalists who left. Okay.
The Loyalists in Canada.
Came up here to become the Brits in Quebec.
Yeah. Right.
The traitors in America? Or what? I guess there are a lot of factions that were in America that there wasn't any one particular group that was in charge.
Well, just to show you that everybody did not want to have a revolution or start a new, you know, a new entity.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to, I don't know what they wanted. Get on with it.
Okay, so let's get to some of the other groups.
All right, so real quick here, I'll go a little faster. So we have New Netherland, which historically is New York. Yeah, originally that was folks who came from Amsterdam.
And that was more mercantile people? More...
Yeah, I think of them as the Ferengis. That's the Wall Street bunch, you know. A global commercial trading society, tolerant, pragmatic, creative. Dutch in many ways, despite declining numbers of those actual Dutch
Very
origin.
Few actual Dutch people, but they did influence the mentality.
Very practical people, and, still are. Yeah,
absolutely. Okay, you know, I'm not going to have time to get all the way through this before the break, so I'm just going to do one more quickly. The fifth group is called the Tidewater, and I haven't really heard of these before.
Tidewater.
Very interesting. Historically influential aristocratic gentry, which are now in declining influence due to geographical isolation in the mid-Atlantic coast area.
So they were like the Brits that were nobles,
right.
And they were used to having serfs that worked for them.
That's right.
Right? So
more
part of the southern
loyal
mentality a little bit.
That's right.
The aristocratic gentry.
That's right, the folks who had slaves. Anyway, we're going to go to our break right now, and then we'll come back for more on the 11 nations.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking about American history here a little bit. American Nations, a history of the 11 rival regional cultures of North America, a book by Colin Woodard, is probably the best way to really start to broach this topic.
Yeah, you can really see America not just like red states and blue states, but you can actually see the history of the political opinions that define our North American continent. Not that just the United States, but actually Mexico, U.S., and Canada.
You can start taking this personally, too, because what's interesting about this approach to history is that you can really look at where your own belief systems evolved from. If you go to Amazon.com, you can see some of the reviews of the book where people really started getting into their own understanding of what they think is real based upon analysis along these lines.
Yeah, we both really became fascinated when Irene was giving us her summary. Let me just finish the list here. I'll go a little quicker, okay? We've gotten the first five groups.
Okay, you want to just mention their names, then we'll go into that?
First Nation Indigenous people, New France being the Quebec, Louisiana folks.
These are the people that
Yankee
have founded
Dome
America.
Being
Yankees,
kind of the Massachusetts.
The Plymouth
liberal.
Rock, that's what we learn in American history.
New England,
yeah.
Right, New Englanders. New Netherland, meaning New York.
Uh-huh.
Tidewater, meaning kind of Jeffersonian, southern plantation owners.
The Tidewater plantation, but they came from the British gentry. They were
British
the upper
gentry.
Class that came to America and started.
They did own some slaves.
They had slaves.
Yeah, but as opposed to the sixth group, which is called the Deep South, which I never knew before, British colonial origins of the Deep South were from the Caribbean slave plantations, like Barbados, right?
Now, you just came from there, right?
Barbados.
Yeah.
This Deep South is polarized on racial lines and is more struggling to maintain their recently acquired political ascendancy. So that is where you think of as really the divided South.
Well, from my understanding, they were the really strict slave owners, the one they treated people like chattel.
Right.
Worse than serfs.
Yeah, when you see Roots or some of these historical slave documentaries, it's really depicting the Deep South.
Yeah, that was, were they British slave owners from
They were originally royalty, the younger children of royal family and aristocratic gentry, mm-hmm. who were the younger sons did not inherited anything while they were in England, and they went to Barbados to start a new way of earning, making money and having title to land. Oh. And then ultimately went to Georgia and started around Charleston.
So they got their training in Barbados.
In this book, they describe the plantation owners in Barbados as being, of all the plantation owners in the North America and the Caribbean, as being the most ostentatious, most avarice. They were just, you know, the greedy rich who wanted to keep everything for themselves.
And they were really in the business of selling human people. Selling slaves.
And their Euro heritage comes from rich families where they weren't the oldest, where they didn't get the inheritance of the family, and so they came to the New World.
To promote, to develop their own wealth and title.
Uh-huh. Wow. I haven't read the book yet. I'm really interested in
it. Funny part of that was that I was in Barbados when I read that part of it, and I couldn't believe it.
Really? And so when you read that, did you see evidence of it all around you?
Well, because I lived in Florida for a long time, and I know I have friends in Georgia, and I see how backward, that's not a nice thing to say, how lack of advance they were in integrating and becoming part of the new age.
That's really? Because they had been brought up with this certain set of values. Yeah. That was inculcated to them from the slave plantation.
Well, the attitude and behaviors towards slavery and black people and, you know, other than their own class.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here, let me just finish the list here. Beyond the Deep South, we also have Greater Appalachia, which are Scotch, Irish, and Roots, and they kind of had a warrior ethic. They're most interested in individual liberty, and even though they're often impoverished, they're very anti-centralized government. They really want to have their own culture. They kind of are people who came as immigrants from unending wars in Scotland and Ireland and Britain. In the
Scotch-Irish. They were kind of like the black of white people at one point, right? Mm-hmm. Or at least from the gentry point of view. The Appalachians famous for being poor.
Yeah. Well, actually, surprisingly, this book makes a big point about the fact that when the surveys are done throughout the country to ask people how they identify as a nationality, the Appalachian people are the highest percentage of people who say they're American. A lot of other people say their ancestral roots as who they are.
Yes.
And but not the Appalachians. They're Americans.
So do you relate to being a half Irish yourself? Do you see that?
Well, I'm in a little bit of a different group. I mean, yeah, my ancestors did come over during the famines in the 1800s.
Potato famines.
The potato famines. But they came out as miners and farmers. And I would relate a little bit more to the next two groups, which are the Midlands, which is the Germanic, the Lake Wobegon type people.
Germanic,
Midlands people they're, I'm going to read you the description here. Germanic, they're skeptical of government. They try to mind their own business. They're passive, sometimes pacifist. And it includes the core of English-speaking Canada as well as a swath across the center of what we commonly call the Midwest. So when you think of the heartland of America and the hardworking farmers, you know, those kind of very practical, down-to-earth people, that's the kind of ancestry I relate to.
They settled originally in Pennsylvania with William Penn. That's where the Quakers settled, or the pacifists. Mm-hmm. And they had a philosophy of letting everybody do what they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And of course, they became overrun by the Appalachians when people started migrating. Mm-hmm. What must be made clear here is that we're talking about the 16 and 1700s.
Yeah, we're talking about the deep historical roots. Let me just finish the list here before we go to our break at 29 minutes. So the ninth group is called El Norte, and this probably is going to be visible to most people in the news today because we're talking about the people who are living along the militarized border between the U.S. and Mexico, and it's people whose heritage is largely not really Mexican because they're the north part of Mexico, and their heritage is very much in the Texas Mexico border area or Arizona Mexico border. So it's really the Hispanic culture that goes all the way back to the 1600s. And so this cultural group is considered El Norte. We next have what's called the Far West, which is the developed, colonized, exploited by seaboard nations, big business, and federal controls. I think of this as kind of the gold miner culture. This is the train development culture.
Well, that's your family also, right?
That's my family too, yeah.
Founded Las Vegas.
That's right, yeah. We're farmers and miners.
They came from the railroads.
Corporates.
Yeah, from the Far West people. It was not farmland, right? Nevada is not farmland.
But it was railroad country.
Yeah, it required railroads and it required mining.
Uh-huh.
And big corporations to settle that part of the planet.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, and here in our last little 30 seconds here, so besides the Far West, the final 11th group is called the Left Coast. This is related to Yankeedom. It's at war with the libertarian corporate agenda of the Far West and with the values of the Deep South. So
yeah, Left Coast, kind of like Ecotopia or Santa Cruz.
Or Santa Cruz, right? That's
San
right.
San Francisco.
All right, folks, so we're going to go to our mid-time break, and we're going to be back with more of the Dr. Future Show. And
tell you why this is interesting to look at history from this point of view.
11 American nations.
We'll take apart a little bit of the news with this perspective.
479-1080.
Give us a call. Let us know what you think.
Bye. Thanks so much, Sam.
All right, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We are talking about a different way of looking at American history with respect to Colin Woodard's book, American Nations, A History of the 11 Rival Regional Cultures of North America. We're here in Montreal, Quebec, with Irene Lambert in the studio here, and Mrs. Future and myself. Let's go to Michael in Live Oak.
Yeah, so this is fascinating. I've never heard it delineated like that. It makes perfect sense.
Isn't that fascinating? Our cultural history is sort of there hiding in plain sight, right?
That's right. I'm from Connecticut, and the influences of, I forget which category it would be.
We call that one the Yankeedom.
That's right. That definitely experienced that. It's still the feeling of that in the air in different places. I'm from New Haven. And see, more so out in the rural parts, that you still small towns with the old churches and very, very like archetypal New England towns. But anyway, I was wondering where in the movie The Music Man, in Iowa, River City, that was obviously a dramatic rendition of that culture. What category would that fit in, the Midwest?
That's a good question. Let's see. Yeah, where the big band comes into the small town. I would say that would probably be a Yankeedom kind of a town. It was not very authoritarian. It was a lot of individualism with a community spirit and an orientation for the greater good, right? Trying to bring a big band to town.
That's right. Yeah, Meredith Wilson, who wrote that, it was originally a play and then a movie. He based it on his actual life growing up in that part of the country.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're familiar with him, huh? Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah, so, thank Michael, you. Very interesting topic. Appreciate it. Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Super. All righty.
Thanks, Michael. How does this approach to American history really help us understand creating a better future? If we really have been factionalized since the very beginning, what have we had to look forward to? Mother, any thoughts on that?
Oh, my.
And we're a fractionated group. We have many different origins. We have ways in which we interrelate with each other. What about the news here? Like, for example, this whole thing about all these children coming up over the border. My understanding is that El Norte, if you consider the Hispanic community, according to Woodard, there is a northern contingent that the northern Mexico and southern U.S. are actually one group of people in a way.
U.S. Mexican-American.
But the mentality of northern Mexico is very different from southern Mexico.
Right, yeah. The folks who live on the border states really don't want to be dominated by the, you know, the southern Mexican government. and they consider themselves the traditional ranchers of that area. They yeah. like their own sovereignty and autonomy, and the families cover both sides of the border, which is why it's so hard to really treat it like a border, because people just dig holes.
That happens in Canada. You know, there are cities along the Canadian-American border that straddle the border. And the Homeland Security is putting a lot of hardship on both sides of those towns. And when you hear people in the state saying, shut the borders and put up a big wall, you know, there are a lot of people who say, oh my God, what are you talking
about?
That's
my family there, right?
Yeah, that's my home. That's your home. We get together. We live together in total harmony. Why are you doing this to us? But with these children coming up from not Mexico necessarily, from Central America, there was just an announcement from some lady in Dallas who wants to do something really big to help these children. You've got to help these children. You can't just send them back into God knows what. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have differences, and you're going to have different approaches to it. One be very hardcore, send them back, and the other will say, we've got to help.
Well, I'll tell you, it sounds like we're just living amid crisis and crisis and crisis, and I don't even know where to go with it. There's millions of people on the border. President Obama is saying, hey, give me some money. We've got to take care of these kids. Why is this even happening? It seemed like the word went out that it's a good time for everybody who's about 16 years old to head north and come to the border of America, because they'll take care of you. The numbers are in record amounts that we've never seen before.
Or do we have to have a better understanding of what they're living with down there, where it's so important to send your children away to protect them? What is life like where these children are living, where they came from?
Yeah, well, these are all...
And that will create compassion, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But it doesn't solve the problem of how do we deal with it.
Well, okay, we're divorced from the news in what we're looking at today, because we're trying to have a perspective that helps us understand which groups of people can relate to each other, and to really take that conversation to a little bit more of an intelligent place. Instead of thinking that we have this simplistic view of just the Democrats and the Republicans and the conservatives and the liberals, or, you know, any of these kind of simplistic divisions, we actually have communities of people who have historical roots. And these communities of people with historical roots can probably understand each other in a way that allows them to be self-governing.
Yeah. Here's an interesting quote from someone who was doing a review of the book on 11 Nations. He says, reading American Nations, I felt the pieces falling into place. It showed me I grew up roughly where the Deep South, Appalachian, El Norte meet in eastern Texas. We said we were Scotch-Irish, but seemed to have no knowledge or interest in how we came to be there. Nor did I ever know anyone who was aware that there were early Spanish missions in the pine woods of East Texas, or that there had been a large Cherokee village not 4 miles from my home. Later, I learned that my own family had entered the U.S. and South Carolina from Barbados in the 1680s. Little is known about them except that they were poor whites. So now we know there's a good chance they were indentured servants to Barbadian slave lords. How many Americans know the Deep South was founded at Charleston by migrants from Barbados? I never did. I had always lumped Tidewater, Appalachia, and the Deep South as the South. But distinguishing them by origin explains a lot.
Yeah.
No?
Right.
Now I have some insight into features of the country and my county, even, that had puzzled me. Why my neighbors had such casual contempt for blacks, Jews, Mexicans, Indians, Catholics, Chinese, and all other foreigners. Why KKK actions were still fresh in older folks' memories. Why blacks lived either in their own parts of town, literally across the tracks, or entirely separate in their own towns or isolated communities tucked away in the woods. Why my parents were so puzzled about that our Negroes seemed dissatisfied with the hand-me-downs of their clothes. I remember puzzled discussions about what do they want, implying lack of gratitude. Why neighbors said bite a wee or stay a while, you know, and otherwise spoken a Texas drawl. Very interesting.
Yeah.
So these things are, you know, you start to look at your own history and how it unfolds.
Yeah, in a whole different way. All right, folks, it's time for another break. So we're going to come back and keep talking about 11 American nations when we get back here on the Dr. Future Show. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking about Colin Woodard's book, The 11 American Nations, a different way of looking at American history based on 11 different social groups that helped organize and create America. 11 groups that still have their unique identity even in today's world where we're all been overlaid with an idea of what it is to be an American or Canadian for that matter. You know, the question is that where does this lead for the future? Do we expect to have one centralized government forever? Is there a danger of this splitting apart at this point, or what? I mean, I'm here in Quebec right now. Quebec is always threatening to leave Canada. Is this the future? What do you think?
Let's hear, Irene.
What do I think?
Yeah, because you've been living here in Quebec, and I guess it was in the 80s, there was a vote to actually become a separate nation.
Well, we just voted in a new government, voted out the old Parti Québécois, who is the separatist party, who we thought was going to go for separation the minute they got a majority, and the public voted them out of power.
Yeah.
And so do you think that ship has sailed?
But separation is always independence and self-government and unfair government. And, you know, nobody's ever happy with the government. So separation is always on the docket.
Well, especially in this era where you've got Arab Spring happening and you've got all of these young people in all of these countries saying that they're dissatisfied with their traditional government, but they don't have something new to replace it. And you've got the factions in Crimea sort of wanting sovereignty, but also wanting the protection of Russia to settle their local disputes. And there's some real angst going on in the world right now about whether they want to be accountable to a strong central government or whether they want to have the headaches of a local democracy.
Yeah, or want the world power like the U.S. of A. to take care of them or help them. Everybody's looking to the U.S. to help them out. And the U.S. can't control everything. They can't be there for everybody. So what we have to do is decide that we're a human race. I remember in grade 9 general science, we had a teacher who said, the only thing that's going to bring us together is that we're going to have an invasion from Mars, and we'll all want to stick together as human beings on the one planet.
Because we have a common enemy.
Yeah, I have a common enemy. I think what we do with this book is that we understand our differences and accept each other, agree to disagree, and get on with developing a democracy that takes account of all people. To me, that's what democracy is taking care of the minority. All for one, one for all. Mm-hmm. That saying is bringing new light to me, a new enlightenment, actually.
Yeah. You sound like a Yankee.
Yes.
Yankeedom.
Yes. I'm an egalitarian.
Well, I say that.
And I'm proud of it.
The melting pot idea was a Yankeedom idea.
And is it a melting pot or what's the other word? We're always in Canada, we're talking about a pluralistic society. Yeah. And we're learning to live together as a pluralistic society with new immigrants coming in all the time.
Now, what do you think here in Canada? They don't have the Republicans versus Democrats, but they have
we have the third party. Right? We have the third party.
Is third party working? Do you think that's a good idea?
Who knows?
I see.
We're still together. Approach. We're still together as a country.
Right. And in Canadian dollars, worth 94 cents last time I checked, which is pretty good.
Well, we don't want to be Americans.
Yeah. But do you feel like the people in Quebec are happier now that I guess there's been an increase in the French influence, maybe an increase in the French self-esteem?
Well, I think the world globalism has taught a lot of young people coming up into the business world that French isn't the center of the universe. and that they have to get along with the rest of the world no matter what. So separation is not something the young people are saying is their priority.
Mm-hmm. Well, the kids today are all brought up with the internet, which is actually something that I don't think Woodard addressed at all in this book, about how we now have a common communications tool that definitely connects all factions of
humanity. Talk about the melting pot. I mean, the Google melting pot is probably more significant than anything that's ever happened in history before.
Probably as significant as any nation-state identity.
There's another term, this melting pot or this something other, I can't think of it now, in political science. In the 60s, we were studying it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody can keep their own identity and still live together.
Uh-huh. Right.
You're not going to get people coming from other countries with all their laws and cultures to give it up.
It's
built into them. Multiculturalism is it.
It's the future.
You can't expect people to become one.
Well, how do you deal with the Arab Sharia law folks that want to...
You struggle with it all the time. That gets into more personal politics we don't have time for.
Yeah.
We've got
4 minutes.
Some of the reviews of this 11 American nations actually talk about the different equivalents of Sharia law among some of the religious institutions of America. Right? Where when groups want their rule to not just apply to them out of free choice, but to apply to others who don't want it to apply to them, that's where you really run into the issues.
And should you allow, and if you've already got a set of laws and a way of life, why do they come and want to change it?
Yeah.
They came here to live here, then let them learn to live here. Leave their old laws at home. But it doesn't work that way.
Well, and then you've got the arguments of the First Nation, okay? But the First Nation people, they were already here. And then they had all these Europeans come over and say, hey, sorry, First Nation people, this is new us.
And hey, you know, when we moved from Santa Barbara, and I was 11 years old, to Philadelphia, that was like a different planet. That was like a different culture. Just moving, it didn't seem like the same country. So in a sense, we do have many separate worlds within one world here, and we take it that that's the way things are.
There you go. Yeah, if you've ever experienced culture shock as an American, just moving from one place in the country to another, this book can really help you understand what's going on, what those dynamics are.
Yeah, you can see why the West Coast is the way to, they call it the Left Coast, right?
The Left Coast.
Yeah.
What's left?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think the Left Coast at least does keep an optimistic perspective on things, right? We're here to work together to make it a better place.
And you know what? It just reminded me of something else that I learned in California visiting you people at one time.
Yeah.
It's the balance that you see.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that
seek.
Song?
Yeah.
The balance
Taylor
that you
Scott
seek?
Song? Yeah. Uh-huh.
Balance that you see. Who was a folk singer who wrote that song for us?
Tamara Scott. I wrote that. It's a local...
Santa Cruz songwriter, celebrity. She's
and
got
to
a
me, that's a good guideline for life and for politics, the balance that you seek.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I agree.
They say that the Pilgrims and the Puritans insisted on religious conformity, and the Yankee settlers came to America as families, and they intended to rule themselves, and they were educated, and that they were hostile to aristocratic and royal prerogatives, and that townspeople would work together for the common good, and that congregations were self-governing, and direct democracy processes were the norm. While down south, it was all about the aristocrats that were ruling the plantations and creating the rules. So aristocratic rule was considered normal and that sort of thing. I guess Pennsylvania was the Quaker ethic.
The Midlands.
Big time. But there were German agriculturists who came with William Penn, who came from England, and they wanted it to set up a colony where could do what they did best and wanted to do.
Yeah.
Right. Thanks, folks.
To be continued. Something to think about.
Yeah. It's You've got to read this book.
Yes, American Nations, A History of the 11 Rival Region Cultures in North America. Just search for American Nations 11. You'll find it. Okay, thanks for listening, folks. It's been the Dr. Future Show.
On KSEO, Santa Cruz. See you next week.